I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantain, plantain. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. I'm not going to mess about here. Everyone that needs to be here, say hello right now.
Hello.
What's up?
Hola.
Yes, that was Mitch. Mitch is back after his trip to the mountains. Not mountains of snow, by the way. Mountains. It was mountains of cocaine, but he's back now.
It's not exactly like a trip to the mountains where I just live in a place with mountains where I can just drive 2 hours away and do, as Dean put it, white people shit and go skiing.
I mean, mountains of, Colombia's finest,
Yeah, of course. You know, I got a job now. I can finance that kind of investment.
If you keep up like this, you're not going to have that job for long. You better shut the fuck up.
Look, man, look. You can tell we're all happy, and that's because we smoked the shit out of Liverpool again. I mean, we're going to talk about stats and shit, but Liverpool literally had the highest XG against them in their Premier League history today. And who gave it to them? Arsene Wenger and his band of merry thugs. That's right. So we're going to get into it, and we're going to shit on Liverpool because that's, it just feels that's what we need to do. But yeah, I think the main thing that I want to kind of start off with here is, guys, how do you feel genuinely about team news leaking, like literally on the morning of games? It's getting ridiculous now. Like, genuinely, we heard about Gabagool not being in the squad. I heard pretty much first thing in the morning. I woke up and then I looked at my phone, and I kissed my teeth. But my missus looks at me, he's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Nothing, it's fine." But I was so angry. Oh God, how did you guys feel?
I feel like it's just, I don't like it, but it's just a part of the game now. And I already expected, it wasn't a surprise to me. Hmm. Like, I already expected him not to be fit. And if he was going to be called fit, I thought he would be out, by halftime. Because he did not look, by the end of the last game, I was like, And the comments from Arteta were very sus. I was like, no, we need to sit him for a while. Because already it's not looking good, bro.
I mean, you're right, it's a part of the game, but it's annoying because I know for a fact it's happened in the past where teams actually do have the edge of it. One team in particular, I think it was Leicester, and I think Brendan Rodgers was in charge at the time anyway. They got wind of it, basically, and he actually made a change because of that. I think it was Leicester, if I remember correctly, but that kind of thing I'm not a big fan of anyway. But yeah, him not being in the starting lineup, it is what it is. The guy that did come in for him, though, however, and Mitch, this is for you, Havertz. Havertz came in, and that also meant that there's a good chance ESR wouldn't be starting, and I kind of knew it would be way too attacking. Did you have any idea of what kind of role he'd play today? Do you think he will try to occupy the centre backs more, or do you think he'll drop in a bit more? What was your feelings around it?
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess that I wasn't really thinking about it that much. I think you think about when you're playing a false nine, you want to overload the midfield. You want to have someone dropping deeper. You're basically playing a diamond. But you're right. Havertz played a lot higher, and it resulted in Konate getting sent off.
He ran from the Saliba test, but
exactly. But that's what you want from someone like Havertz. We've talked so much about him being when he's played the left eight role, that he's been in a low touch kind of role. He's still able to drag defenders away, but he's just kind of there as opposed to there, emphasis. And he was much more of that today, where he was able to cause a lot more havoc, be an outlet, but also create space for Martinelli to be an outlet, because we use Martinelli as an outlet and use his pace a lot more than I was, not that I was expecting, because I kind of always expect that against Liverpool for Martinelli, but it was specifically the, we're trying to find him every time instead of Havertz. And it was an interesting tactical switch that I guess I didn't really think about until you asked that question. So great leading question, coach.
I think that's a good point that you actually brought up, because speaking of outlets, Liverpool have a wealth of attacking talent, but the best outlet, and quite simply the best, probably the second best player in the league, wasn't available for them today. And it was nice. It was nice not having to face Mo Salah today. And I think that affected both teams tactically a lot. Not only just tactically, but confidence as well. Liverpool can play dog shit the entire game, and they know Salah has got at least one goal and assist in him because he's just that type of player. He doesn't need to be in the zone. He evokes that sort of respect from opponents, and he gets that extra half yard because, you know, he's Mo Salah, basically. But they didn't have him today, and they replaced him basically in that starting lineup with Gakpo. And I'll be honest with you, every time I see Gakpo play against Arsenal, I just breathe a sigh of relief. When I see, if whatever team I would be supporting, if Gakpo is playing against me, I'm putting my feet up. I'm thinking, all right, he's not doing fuck all today. And that actually led to, I think, Arsenal stop being even more aggressive, because not just because Salah's not playing, because obviously Jota's there as well, but because of who came in for him, it gave it. Go on, Dean.
Do you think, with Gakpo, do you think it's because Klopp doesn't play him as a winger and he tries to play him centrally instead?
Well, it doesn't matter either way, because he hasn't got athletic gifts on the wings anyway. So.
I don't think he has the minerals, in my opinion.
He just does it, man. And I'm not saying he's a bad player, but he's not the standard. You look at all the other forwards, he's quite literally the one that stands out the most. Like, look at Diaz, Nunez, even though he's got clown feet, it is what it is. Jota, Salah, these are all guys that can give you a bad day. Gakpo's biggest contribution is that 7-0 win. Outside of that, I do not remember him doing anything. So that helped Arsenal at least anyway, I think, from that perspective. And I suppose tactically, Gabby, do you think Arteta kind of made an adjustment to our style, knowing that Salah's not playing? And did you notice what it was?
I do think he made an adjustment. I'm not a tactical person, so I can't say I know what it was, but I, like, when I was reading the timeline and people were like, oh, well, Kai's going to have a better performance because he's playing at center forward. That's what I was thinking in my head. I was like, no Salah, and we're playing Kai at center forward. I just think that it was, the plan was just to run at them. Mm. Like, you don't have that person who's going to constantly get in behind. You don't have that constant threat. Mm. I mean, granted, you know, I know Nunez was on the bench, but Diaz and Jota are very good players, but they're not to the level of Salah. You're not having that constant threat in behind. Yeah. They don't have the pace and they don't have the clinical edge that he has. Mm. And you know they were going to target Zinchenko if Salah was still there.
Can I just stop you? Do you know who did have that today? Martinelli, go on.
Sorry. He sure did. The ball was at the top. I mean, I was thinking, I know this might be a hot take, but I was thinking about it today and I was like, I even changed my group chat to this name because I'm going to go full like 10 toes down on this. Like, I really think that Kai Havertz is our King Chaos. Like, he is our Darwin Nunez, because he doesn't score, but like, I mean, he does, but not to the level that we need him to. But he causes chaos in that back line. He really does.
The thing is, I don't think, and Mitch, I'm going to lob this to you, but I don't think teams really know how to deal with him because of how awkward he is in that regard. Like, he's such a great mover. He's such a great mover, and he's got a big frame, and he's deceptively, I wouldn't say deceptively quick, because he couldn't run away from McAllister, who's a training cone, but his stride length is really, really long. Mitch, do you think, because teams don't know kind of how to, I suppose, pin him down to what sort of player he is, do you think that gives him an advantage to kind of just, you know, do his thing, if you were?
God, this sounds like such a backhanded compliment for Kai. It's like, oh man, he's just such a fucking awkward dude that he's just like good somehow. he can barely like control his body, which is why he's just so unpredictable for players.
I think that's what it is. Like, go on, then.
If I may, with Kai, remember when we beat City earlier in the season, which we haven't really bragged about enough because we don't feel like, I think we're still a little, we have a little trepidation about whether we're going to win the league or not. And even if we beat them and we don't win the league, then it doesn't matter. I think is why we don't brag about that, because it was a big fucking deal to beat City at home. Mm-hmm. You know, the next step is to do it away. We'll see how that goes later in the season.
Yeah.
But we all talked about how, if the only thing Kai Havertz ever does for Arsenal is help us beat City every time we start him against City, then he's worth the 65 million. And today was another illustration of that for me, I think. Yeah.
Say that shit again. The only thing that he does is help us beat City. Yeah. I'll pay that 65 million again.
Oh, for sure, for sure, for sure. I mean, to be honest, he's already paid, to me at least, he's already paid back that 65 million with that. Okay, so yeah, I suppose one of the things that I noticed again, and it's been a feature this season, Zinni is not inverting anymore, guys. He just doesn't do it to the same regularity as last season. Today I really enjoyed it. Mitch, I want to let you go, but today I really enjoyed the fact that he didn't do it. But whenever he did come in, when he did come in field, we scored an opening goal. And it wasn't that he came in field and found the pass. He just literally faked to go wide, came in field, gave it, and then went. And then if you looked at it, basically, the way that pattern of play where you have two players in one line, another player in another line, creates a box, if you like, or I like to call it the magic square. Liverpool didn't know whether to press or not because of that. And it's because Zinni wasn't already there. He created it by staying wide, basically. Mitch, do you think Arsenal are probably now at a stage where we've kind of evolved past that?
No, I think it was a tactical choice today. Mm. And I think most of it comes with playing a double pivot. Mm. You know, the whole point of having Zinchenko invert is that you want someone who can progress the ball in midfield really effectively next to a lone pivot. And when you're playing a double pivot and you're playing someone like Jorginho who can progress the ball really, really effectively, you're not needing someone like Zinchenko to invert. And so I think it was just a little bit more of a tactical choice. He's our starting left back. Tomiyasu wasn't available because he just played a couple days ago for Japan. So it made sense that he started and kind of played as a little bit more of a traditional left back. I don't think that it's a full I don't think it's a full tactical choice going forward. I think it's more just for this game.
Sure. Go on. Yeah.
And I think to that point, I think that's why I thought Kivior was going to start today. Once it became clear that Jorginho was going to play, it kind of felt like Kivior was going to start, because that's what happened when we played against him in the FA Cup and lost that game a couple weeks ago. Another game in which we outplayed them probably just as much as we did today. We just didn't score in that game, but we scored in this game. And if you have Jorginho and Rice in the lineup, you don't necessarily need Zinchenko inverting as well. So it made sense that we could, you know, if Salah was playing, I think we'd probably start with Kivior today.
Sure.
To just get rid of the, you know, the goal that Zinchenko was going to give them at some point today. But thankfully, Saliba beat into him for whatever reason.
Oh, we're gonna get on to him, actually. I want us to actually dedicate a lot of time.
I'll be op number one for that
part. We're gonna dedicate some time to Jorginho today because, man, I've got some things to say. I mean, again, like, let's talk about the opening goal. I'm personally not pissed that Havertz missed. It is what it is. The important thing was that he recognized his role in the move. He set himself free. Got through on goal. It was a very, very, very bad finish. Like, it was a shit finish. Hit into the ground. He just didn't look composed at all. It was shit. But with that being said, the aggression that Arsenal played with throughout that first half meant that there was somebody following up, and that person was the best right wing in the league right now, Bukayo Saka. Gabby, take it away.
Listen, you saying shit finish, it was football heritage. He was just trying to do the irvings and wounds, and it just didn't come up. It's okay. We scored. Yeah. That's all I care about. I was like, listen, when I saw him in the middle by himself running in on the goal, I was like, is this happening right now? Like, how did we get here? Like, what happened? Like, I already knew he was going to miss, and that was fine. But I was like, listen, we got the second runner, and we scored a rebound. I always thought this game was going to be, we get a bunch of chances, we miss a bunch of chances, hopefully we nick one or two, and we'll see if we win or we concede that much. Yeah. But the way that game was open, the way that first chance came about,
I mean,
I did not expect that, and I was really happy that Bukayo had the... I feel like sometimes in front of goal, we get anxious. Like, we just start just kicking at anything, or we do the complete opposite and we get too casual with our finishes. Mm. He was right in the middle, very composed, put it in the back of the net. That's it.
And this is a thing that we've mentioned, me and Dean mentioned a lot of times. Not only just Saka, but all of our forwards in general, they haven't, the confidence in when shooting has not been there. Saka, since the turn of the year, seems to have found his groove again in the confidence and the composure he's taken in his shooting. But again, I kind of really want to hone in on our aggression, right? Arsenal, to me, are at their best when we're playing just a really aggressive game, whether it's home or away. And I think the person that sums up the most is Saka. Like, Mitch, do you think Saka's return to form basically has just pushed us back to the level that we're expecting, because he looks like a million bucks right now. He just keeps he's so aggressive right now. And I think when Robertson came on, which we'll get to kind of thing, I feel like it was almost like, okay, I'm taking this a bit more personal now, basically. But go on.
Yeah, I think when I'm going to say a really fucking obvious thing. Yeah. When your best player is playing well, your team's probably going to play better. Like that's pretty simple. When your best player is playing well, that's going to help. It's going to help a lot. But you mentioned our aggression, and I think that the player that stood out to me in that aspect the most, and I think consistently does, is Martin Odegaard. I think he's just like such a great presser. And so good at leading the press every single time. And it was really overwhelming, especially in the first half for Liverpool, because we were constantly regaining the ball in high areas and constantly getting in dangerous positions. I think it eased off a little bit at the beginning of the second half because, let's be real, you're not going to be able to press for a whole 90 minutes. Just not possible. But when we were doing that and when Odegaard was leading that charge, we were more dangerous and we were able to regain the ball in really, really good areas.
Yeah, and I think as well, when we all complain about how lethargic we looked against Fulham and whatnot, and how we need a break. That break might literally be the difference maker, because everyone just seems fresh. Ben White was giving out nutmegs in the first half.
Benny White, go ahead.
Like, are you taking the piss? Like, he is. Like, that's a sign of someone that's not fatigued. He's ready to go.
He was rocking my world. Yeah. I can't lie. I mean, I agree with Mitch. I was going to say that about Odegaard too. He always leads the press first. Like, he's running up and down. That guy puts miles on those legs, for real. Yeah. And also, I just have to say, I'm dying because Kai just said "Ya gunners, ya" on his
No way. He's off the heart, like, man.
Football heritage. He gets it.
He gets it. I suppose let's talk about their goal, which, for all intents and purposes, guys, I know Saliba's pretty damn near perfect every game, but he had a fucking stinker with that. Like, it was so bad. I was actually so confused because I was thinking, why hasn't he cleared it? And I think what it is that we forget that he's still 21 years old. That's more because an experienced player absolutely hoofs it. They don't even wait. But yeah, go on, Dean.
I think we'll follow Clive from the Arsenal Reserve podcast here. Yeah. And he said something very, very prescient. He said, they teach you to deal with the situation or the situation deals with you.
Yeah.
He was supposed to win the header from the hoof initially over Luis Diaz. It's like, bro, you can't be losing the duel in the air to Luis Diaz. Yeah, that's been the one sort of weakness come not weakness we've been talking about with him since we first got him as an 18-year-old. Hmm. And once he messed that up, I think it just totally short-circuited his brain. And because I don't know, like, my grandmother clears that shit, and she's dead. She been dead for like 10 years now. She would have cleared that shit, dead ass, you know, but I'm done. Gabby, you're going to get in on this.
Oh, yeah. I have been Saliba's biggest op for the last few weeks because I love him, but he just – I haven't put it on the timeline because I'm not arguing with idiots, but I talk about it a lot in my group chat, and Saliba gets complacent. He gets – overconfident in his own ability to deal with something, in his own physicality, and his way in which he bodies off people so easily, that there's no reason that ball should have went into the back of the net.
No.
Clear that ball. I don't know what he was waiting on. I don't know why he was waiting on Raya to get it. It's so unfortunate that it hit Gabriel's hand and then went into the back of the net after that. It just, like, calamity of errors, but it doesn't happen. Like you said, if he, one, wins the header, or two, clears the ball afterwards, why are you holding off Diaz in your own box? Kick it out. Kick it anywhere but your own net.
And do you know, I feel like this is actually, the way it went in is pretty much how, it just shows you, like, the universe, who the universe favors, because the own goal is going to go down with Gabriel, but Gabriel had nothing to do with it.
I question about that real quick because, you know, my dad was texting me updates through this entire game. He doesn't really watch soccer very much, but, you know, very nice of him that he's watching this game and texting me about it. But he texted me at halftime and I was like, yeah, you're right. What? He's like, why didn't they call the goal back and have it be a penalty? Because it went off of Gabriel's hand. And again, I've reiterated on I do not understand how the handball rule works. I don't understand how any rules in soccer work anymore because it's all just stupid and I don't get it. But
like a simple advantage in this case, though. It's like, why call it back when the ball already went in the net? Let's just move on.
You know? I think that's
fair. Happy for it to be what it was. You know, like,
we don't need to waste time, have a penalty.
Right. And I think just to reiterate, like, this is the only point I'm here to make today. If that's what it took for Liverpool to get a goal from us today, then it just shows how much we dominated these motherfuckers. Yeah, we're so much better than them. Like, we were better than them to the extent that, you know, like, I wish Sadio Mane and Roberto Firmino were back so we could rub it in your face, those fucking pricks. Like, you know, and real quick,
if they were going to give a penalty for that, Jota would have got his annual goal against us, and I did not want to see that again. Sorry.
Exactly. I fucking hate his face so much. I don't care what the fuck he's doing. I hate that guy's face. Like, if you
I specifically put him in my FPL team because I was like, if I put him in my FPL team, the reverse curse will work. I know it. I'm like, every time I put Salah, every time I captain Salah, he always blanks every time. And I was like, listen, it needs to happen for me. Please.
Well, guess who was my captain was this weekend? And it wasn't Cunha, despite him being in my team. It was Bukayo Saka. I trust that boy so much. That, like, I just know he's the shit. But
I haven't touched my FPL in like 2 months. My captain's still Holland. He hasn't played in like a month.
Speaking of captains, real quick before we move on, we talked about Odegaard very briefly and about how he always leads the press. And I wanted to point out that even though he's a different profile of player, Mikel has basically turned Odegaard into Jordan Henderson.
So that's
basically what he is. Like, he has him do different things depending on different opposition.
Yeah.
And for Liverpool, Henderson was, his different things was mostly just running.
Yeah.
And Odegaard is a little more subtle to what he does, but it's the same kind of player. He's basically the coach on the field, even if he doesn't get the credit in a particular game because he didn't shine as much or whatever.
Well, that's a good point, because I think I think Odegaard is the even though he leads the press, basically, he actually directs players where they need to go. Even if they know already, kind of thing, but he wants them to be that split second quicker, because obviously he can gain an advantage in a split second. So you're right, like, he's basically like a Swiss Army knife, if you like, but his best qualities are always going to be in the final third. The subtleties, we simply don't have another player in our team that can put it all together like he can. I mean, Fabio Vieira, to my mind, has a better final pass than him, but he doesn't have the overall package. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but Mitch, I want to know if you noticed. Have you noticed how well Klopp starts second half, regardless of if they're winning or not, and how well he's able to adapt to his team? Is that something that you've noticed?
You know, I'm going to be honest. I don't watch all that much Liverpool because I don't love watching teams that we're competing with, because it just frustrates me. I've said where I don't watch City games, and same thing where it's just like, oh, I'll be rooting against them, and then something. They inevitably win the game.
So you're not a masochist, because
that's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Fair. I enjoy my life. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Cool. Fair enough. So I think that Klopp's been famed for is that he's probably the best at making those probably in-game adaptations, but especially in the second half. Basically, if you've smoked Liverpool and you're only 1-0 up, basically, pretty much kiss that game goodbye, because he's going to make the necessary tactical and maybe even subs as well, like to make sure that the second half goes a different way. And today was a textbook example of that. Those first 15 minutes of the second half, I wanted to vomit. I really want. Like, it was
insane. We're on the same page. You guys were talking about at the beginning, before the game started, you know, how you were calm, and you know, I was pretty all right. I figured I knew how the game was going to go, but once we conceded that goal, we went into halftime. I was like, we might be cooked. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Klopp is so good at the passion halftime talk.
Yeah.
And they came out the gate swinging. Like, they really did. And I was like, just quiet the storm. Like, just wait for a little bit. And then we can move. Like, we can grow into the game in the second half, because they really pressed us in that second half. That first 15 minutes, they were on our necks. Yeah. I mean, they weren't like, you know, every shot to goal was good or anything like that, but they were still on our necks. And I was like, just don't make a mistake. You just have to wait it out, and then we can move again, which is what they did. And I was like, good.
Well, they can take their they won 15 minutes trophy. I will more than happy to let them have that, because we're being too nice to Liverpool right now, because they fucking stunk.
No, to be fair, let me just have to be... Be a bit more complimentary to him. I have to put my hands together and say,
"The fuck is this?"
what a combined XG of 0.38 for the entire game for them. What a
okay, yeah.
Well, the tactical change that they made, right, was really, really clever, but also just a subtle thing that people underrate how not joining an attack immediately can do for your team. Curtis Jones, obviously Liverpool play a 4-3-3 pretty much almost every day of the week, right? Curtis Jones decided to start deeper. Well, Klopp told him to start deeper in the second half, right? So what I meant is that he'd get the ball to centre backs, he'd give it and go, and then he just let the ball, he let the game progress, and before you know it, he's actually caught up with play when they've gone direct. That means nobody's marking him. He got a couple of good shots and a couple of good passes off that, and that helped them build their momentum. The issue with that for Arsenal is that Rice and Jorginho aren't tracking him because he's like 30 yards from their goal anyway. So by the time he's arrived, they have to go out there. Once they go out there, at least space they're going to leave space to go out to challenge him. If he gives a quick give and go, they're at the heart of our defense basically, and it kept on happening. And I didn't really enjoy it. I think that's a really fucking smart move. But Arsenal eventually, after I suppose Liverpool gassed themselves up, I'm sure we all remember the game last year where we beat them 3-2. That second half, those last 20 minutes of that second half against them, I think was arguably in our best performance of the season. And we took the game away from them by just keeping the ball and just making sure that every time we attacked, we made the centre backs face their goal. I think a similar thing happened today, where we weathered the storm and we just started finding our pattern, finding our passing again. And obviously we get the second goal, but leading up to that, Gabby, like, how impressed were you with the way that we weathered the storm after they had their little 15-minute flurry or whatever?
I was very impressed. I mean, I've said this for months, but I really believe that we are one of the best teams out of possession. Okay. And once you gather that storm in the first 15 minutes, like, I was like, I'm not worried. Like, once you get that off your back, then you're like, all right, we can play our game. We're at home. Yeah. Hummel them. Like, that's it. And we had the players to do what we wanted to do. Everybody in midfield for me got basically an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in midfield. Declan Rice was immense. I mean, we're constantly talking about our defense, but like, I'm not going to count the Declan Rice defense for once. Declan Rice was immense. And then Kai Havertz wasn't in our midfield, but he was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He was constantly running out their back line. And then Georgie was fantastic. My personal man of the match. I'm glad he got man of the match. Like, and we already talked about Odegaard.
Yeah.
I was like, get the ball forward, give the ball to Martinelli, kick the ball up to Kai and get the ball forward. Like, drawing fouls, getting you up the pitch, and not in a, like, stop, start mm-hmm. way, but, like, in a, yeah, we're going to be on your next now. Like, you got your little 15 minutes, and now, like, we're playing at home. We're going to go on and win this game.
Yeah. Now, I think you're absolutely spot on, especially the fact that our midfield wrestled back control. We dug in, you know, we suffered a bit, and we wrestled back control. And I'll be honest, to my mind, Liverpool just don't have a better midfield than us. Not in, even with our injuries and whatnot. They just don't. Like, McAllister, Mitch, I want you to get on this, because maybe it was your son off, but I don't know if you was a big fan of McAllister, but in general, McAllister is a really good footballer, and Klopp bigged him up this week saying he's a doctor of football, whatever it is. Anyway, I don't think he's that good, especially without the ball. And playing midfield, a lot of the game is without the ball as well. I think he's a training cone, basically. I think he's so easy to get past. He's probably worse athletically than Jorginho, which is crazy because Jorginho's got the body of a 14-year-old, you know, but it is what it is. But yeah, McAllister isn't that good running back to his own goal. He's not good at defending big spaces. He's good at when these teams are pressing, he's good at, you know, nicking the ball around the corner and stuff like that. But in general, defensively, I just think he's a car crash. I just want you to tell me, Mitch, how much better is Jorginho at football than McAllister? Because I don't think it shouldn't even be a conversation. I think you should describe to me just how much better he is.
I'm willing to give McAllister a little bit more leeway than you are, because I think that he's being played crazy out of position. Liverpool doesn't really have a true six other than Endo, who wasn't available. And so they're makeshift putting McAllister there, who, all things considered, considering he's a more attacking player, hasn't done terribly, I don't think. I think my overarching thought about Liverpool the entire season has been that I think that their lack of a true six will be the thing that, like, ultimately hurts them and stops them from winning the title. I said that before the season when I predicted them to not even be in the title race, and I'm going to stick to my guns and saying that now, that I do think that that will be the stumbling block ultimately for this Liverpool team. Now, to just talk about Jorginho, who I thought was just fucking wonderful today. Because we don't necessarily need to just like compare him to McAllister, because I just think Jorginho.
No, but I want to. I need people to know that McAllister is dog shit. Oh, go on.
Fair enough. I think Jorginho was outstanding today. The way that he was able to, you know, just control the game so effectively. He was so good under pressure, so good in tight spaces. Exactly like what the person next to Declan Rice needs to be doing in progression. And that's exactly what he did. And it was really, really effective and a worthy man of the match.
Yeah, for sure. Go on, Dean.
Gabby, real quick. We've had a lot of chatter over the last, I guess, the whole season about Arsenal and open play goals. What do you make of Arsenal getting to play a team that actually wants to play football today and scoring a bunch of open play goals?
It was fucking lovely. It was so fucking lovely. And it's why we play better when we're playing the Champions League. Like, honestly. I mean, look at the way that Liverpool played in this game and the way that we played. Who did we just play? I can't even think.
Nottingham Forest.
Thank you. The way that we just played Forest. Like, 11 players in the, like, damn near in their own box. Like, bruh. It's frustrating to watch and it's frustrating to play against. And I know the players hate it. And we have so many players that just want to run, like Martinelli. You just want to run at your man and get into the box and like take a shot or two. And the spaces that we found in this game, that's what I want to see. That's when we're at our best, other than the out of possession stuff. That's when we're at our best. When we have space to get the ball in behind or play through balls, listen.
Yeah,
lovely. It was lovely stuff. We should have scored more.
I think you make a good point there, because I think Liverpool probably feel the same way as well. Arteta mentioned it. He said that one of the main reasons why we suffered is because Liverpool were attacking space, and Liverpool are just a sick team. Let's be honest, they're a really good team. And even with all of our, you know, great defensive pairings and whatnot throughout the pitch, Liverpool are can move the ball really quickly and make you run out of position so fast. And that's part of the reason why we suffered. But somebody else that can move really, really fast. Martinelli, guys. That cross to Saka should have scored, by the way. I'm pretty sure that is probably going to be in the top three sprints we recorded so far in the season, because I was out of breath watching him, and I don't even want to know what Konate was feeling. But I was terrified feeling, oh shit,
I know who was feeling, coach. He was feeling his hamstrings.
He got cooked.
he is so fast. And I've seen him run into space loads of time, like live. I've seen it. But I think we might need to drug test him. I think we might, because that was ungodly, man. And he kept doing it so much so that I think even when he slowed it down and obviously he started dribbling and stuff, someone like Trent, who had to go off, by the way, guys, he had to go off because he couldn't handle him, like, probably thought, you know, it's probably best that I do come off because I'm going to cost my team a goal. Martinelli in this form just seems to be razor sharp and deadly.
Coach, is it that he's in razor sharp form or that he was playing Trent Alexander-Arnold? I mean, he walks him like a dog every fucking time. Like, we're used to this shit. After the game, Martinelli did the interview and was like, I always have a good game against these guys.
Yeah,
you know, I know it's Black History Month and shit, and we shouldn't be doing that, though. So, fellow brother, but...
Wait, listen, we might have to circle back March 1st. I'm sorry.
for real. But you know what, Mitch, I think you made a good point as well about Jorginho. Let's go a little bit longer on that. Jorginho's progressive passing, I know people love our player can take it on a half turn and he gets it forward really accurately and really quickly, but I think the actual biggest strength of it all is the actual pass selection, because Arsenal are not short for options when he turns a face. He can go long, he can go short, he can play it into someone like Havertz, who drops deep, and like he will find what the passing needs, but he seems to make the right decision almost every time, and that's what I think set the platform for us to wrestle back control of the game, Mitch. Like, what did you actually enjoy most about that?
Yeah, I think when you watch Jorginho, he's just such a fucking smart player. Where even with his physical deficiencies, you still see how good he can be. Mm-hmm. And like, he's 31, 32 now, like. Mm-hmm. there's a very good chance that when he leaves Arsenal, he's going to keep playing at a high level for a long time because he can. His game is not reliant on physical attributes. If you go to a league where you're less reliant on that and you're able to be an intelligent double pivot player, he's going to be a really, really efficient player for a long time. Dean had to like give me a history lesson a couple months ago when we were doing the soccer pod or the soccer edition. Because I was kind of shitting on Sergio Busquets for like not being like, oh, I don't know if he's going to have like the physical capabilities to like be an MLS. And he's like, no. So you watch this video and like you'll learn about this. And I was like, okay, all right, I'll hold my hands up. You don't need the physical capabilities to do a role like that or to, you know, be a super intelligent player like someone like Jorginho or someone like Busquets. Where, you know, you watch a game like that from Jorginho and you're like, man, I wish you were 10 years younger, man. Like you'd be just a fucking stalwart in this team forever if you were just like 10 years younger, like, fuck, 5 years younger. And it just speaks to how intelligent of a player that he is and how well that he complements this team and complements Declan Rice when they play in a pivot. And man, I'm really shocked that like he's even like still here and like still playing at a high level, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, guys, we have to remember that as much as we shit on him when we were making the signing, or I was at least anyway, and how he's perceived as a player. Like, let's be very clear. He was supposed to go to City before he went to Chelsea. Like Pep wanted him, you know. He was like the main man for Sarri's Napoli side. You know what I mean? Like he was essentially the system. Jorginho is a top level player. My whole issue is with the Premier League is that I've seen players better than Jorginho absolutely die here because they can't keep up the physical demands. That's the bottom line. And I think we were right to have questions over, especially with Chelsea letting him go as well. But he's got tons to offer, especially in a capacity like this where you need a calmer head at home to, you know, kind of help you see you through a game like this, because again, you're playing a really top side at Liverpool. Go on, Dean.
I have a question for you, coach. Do you think this version of Declan Rice next to someone like Jorginho is the best version of Declan Rice, where he gets a run every so often? Because I feel like when he plays, I mean, ultimately he's going to be the number six for the long term, I think. But when he's playing there, that whole running shit is like, nah, you can't do that, bro.
Yeah.
And so he gets through that as part of a double pivot. So I kind of feel like maybe we should rock with this shit moving forward.
So here's the thing. I didn't, as much as, you know, it looked like a double pivot, like I saw plenty of times whenever Jorginho had the ball, Rice was in the same line as Odegaard. Do you know what I mean? It didn't feel like a double pivot. Maybe off the ball at times, yeah, for sure. And especially in the 4-4-2, of course, them two are a pivot in the middle. But again, that's our shape off the ball, so 4-4-2. I think Declan Rice next to someone like Jorginho, it actually probably works even better away from home, because what tends to happen is if Arsenal are really good defensively, Arsenal will hold their own against, I don't know, a City or whatever, and then you have Declan Rice running into space on the break on the ball. Doesn't that sound like heaven for us, but a nightmare for the other team? Right, that's kind of what you want. You don't want your six doing that away from home. You kind of want somebody else there. So, yeah, I agree that this current iteration, it probably works best, but I like to see it more from at home, if we're going to carry on doing that, from a less defensive standpoint, basically. I like to see him being a bit more aggressive when looking for the ball, basically, in more dangerous areas. But, yeah, guys, look, Virgil van Dijk is someone that Arteta singled out as one of the people that demonstrates the difference between us and being a top side.
Don't be disrespectful. Don't be disrespectful. No, you're fighting it. I can see your like. Don't say no crazy shit.
Okay, all right.
You're about to say some crazy shit.
It would have been a 2v2 right now.
I will say that it is crazy that two of the best center backs in the Premier League were playing in this game, and they both had errors leading to goal.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that fucking crazy? This game was stupid. This was a stupid fucking game.
And that's the thing. He obviously helped us to obviously get the lead, right? But I suppose, Gabby, I want to ask you, we spoke about Martinelli's pace again, but Do you think you told me before you think we need another striker, right? Well, two strikers essentially. But do you think that those resources can be better placed signing someone like Enneta, who also has Syrian pace? Because Marseille is quite literally the only one in our entire squad that could chase down a ball like that and obviously get off the win. And look, Martinelli's a big game player in general, so he's always going to chase everything. But the point I'm making is that could you imagine taking off Martinelli and then bringing on Enneta? Doesn't that sound a bit more appealing? You know?
Listen. It's Black History Month, so I have a dream. I've been talking about, like, if I were to even go backwards a little bit, yeah. You guys are talking about Jorginho. I say re-sign Jorginho and don't get another midfielder.
Let's not be hasty.
Wait. Let me land. I am an advocate for spending all of our money in our attack. Like, I want to give me a Neto. I mean, he's very injury prone, so that's my aversion to him. But, like, bring me a Neto, bring me a Kubo, bring me a Nico Williams, bring me somebody. Bring me a Xavi Simmons. I don't know. Bring me someone who can play a winger and bring me another striker. That's what I want. I don't want us to spend money, like, after that. Like, that's what we need.
I think to give another team a firm handshake so they take number 5 from us, and then we sign a midfielder.
I think Zuby's done already, so it doesn't really matter.
He's done, I think, for sure.
I think we're going to get him anyway, but I think we need another winger bad.
From a midfield thing, to back Gabby up real quick, how much worse can Jorginho be than he is right now?
Well, put it like
this. He can't run.
Yeah,
he's not going to get slower.
Well, put it like this. Everybody else next season, and I'm looking at teams like Chelsea, unfortunately, even United as well, they're going to address midfield issues. And one of the things Chelsea... Okay. Let me finish it.
$200 million.
He spent $1 billion.
One of the things that Chelsea don't have an issue with is athletics in midfield outside of Enzo, but that's neither here nor there. He's a great player in that, right? United obviously have an issue with someone like Casemiro, and whatnot, but teams are going, like City as well, teams are evolving. We're gonna need to make the jump again. I'm not saying that cast him aside kind of thing, but Jorginho shouldn't, because of how great he played today, shouldn't be the reason why we just be like, okay, do you know what, we can deal with it. And like, strike while the iron's hot. If we can find a replacement for 5, do it. Just do it.
I'm just saying we need to replace 5 in the squad. That's it.
Yes, 100%.
Place him at a minimum. If you want to bring someone else in as well to replace our Nani, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gabby is right. We need the bulk of the money when we spend this summer needs to be on a forward player. I don't really care if it's a striker. I don't really care if it's a, well, I actually care.
I was going to say, don't get carried away.
Yeah, actually, for me, I know we've cried a lot about finishing this season and we want to get that killer 9. I'm not super into that. I'm just not. Like, that's the kind of thing you worry about when your team is going through a goal drought, you know. Now, nobody's going to talk about that for a couple weeks going into the summer
I'm sorry for interrupting, but we don't need to talk about the transfer window right now. We just won against Liverpool, guys.
Exactly. I'm not particularly worried about a striker per se, because that's not really the system. The system is designed to elevate Saka and Martinelli. They just need to get better, and their children, they're going to get better.
Yeah, for sure.
So for me, the money should go on someone like Neto, Nico Williams. Get the wrong Ghanaian. Matter of fact, don't get any Ghanaians. I don't want no more Ghanaians on this squad. I'm tired. Get rid of Eddie Nketiah too. I'm tired. That was my AFCON section. I'm done.
But guys, seriously speaking, I really love Martinelli, and I think the fear of him bearing down on goal. You can make someone like VVD is literally one of the best defenders I've ever seen in my entire life. Alisson is, to my mind, and this is not how Alisson's the best goalkeeper in Premier League history. And they both fucked up because we've got a flipping roadrunner that can give Barry Allen a run for his money, kind of thing. These things matter so much. And after that goal went in, Arsenal weren't in any danger. Mitch, did you feel like we were in any danger? Did you feel as if there was a particular change we needed to make?
Well, I mean, there's the change that pissed everyone off is taking Martinelli off.
Of course. Well, let's be real, he was gassed.
That's what I said.
I don't know if there was ever a moment in this game where, like, I felt like we were going to lose, but I did feel, like, a sense of dread when it was still 1-1, and I was just like, Oh my God, if we drop points because of like some fucking stupid ass goal, and then it was only right that we score a stupid ass goal. Yeah. Because everything's got to be even. We got to balance it out. We concede a stupid ass goal. They get concede a super stupid ass goal for this stupid ass game that we came out on top. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
It
is. I'm really pleased. Like there's a lot on it riding up for me personally because I know a bunch of Liverpool fans, and Liverpool fans in general are actually they're calm for the most part, but the ones that I know all seem to be dickheads for the most part. And today was sweet. So I'm telling you guys and the listeners, if you know a Liverpool fan, where you listen to this, tell them that they lost. Tell them that they lost badly. Gone.
Why don't you just name your friends on the podcast? It'll be fun.
I know a lot of Liverpool fans, guys. Like,
why do you know so many Liverpool fans? What's the problem?
Do you think I want to live this way?
Hey, fun fact. My mother used to be a Liverpool fan. I threatened to disown her, and now she's an Arsenal fan. You should try something similar. If I can do that to my mother, you can do that to your friends. Come on.
Yeah, but in general, like there's a Arsenal 2 points behind, right? We'll get to Trossard's goal, I promise. But Arsenal 2 points behind, and Konate's red card actually, but 2 points behind. Generally speaking, this is an open question to anybody, but generally speaking, 2 points behind after, I suppose, arguably our worst run of the season, probably since last season. Guys, how far do you think Arsenal can go with this momentum? Bearing in mind, this is the same combination of fixtures, apart from it being a reverse fixture last season that we faced when we essentially lost the title, when it was Liverpool, then West Ham. Do you see us not dropping points? Not dropping points to West Ham and going on a run, because that's essentially what we need to do. We need to win. Of the 16 games we've got left, guys, we probably need to win about 15 of those if we're being real, because of how good City are. It sounds crazy to say, but do you see us going on a little run at least?
I don't know if I see us not dropping points. I can't. West Ham could be a banana peel, but the thing about Arsenal, like we say, when we lose one, or you know, we always tend to lose in groups, lose one, lose two, lose three. And I think it's much easier to do it the opposite way. You know, once you make winning a habit, it's very hard to stop winning. So for some reason, it just is what it is. And I think this was a very emotional win. Like plenty of people on the timeline said this was a must win. People like pundits on, you know, on panels and whatnot. And I think Arteta made it a must win. Even the way that they trained, they trained yesterday at the Emirates. Like, we need to know what this means.
Yeah, that does happen quite, I wouldn't say super regularly, but it does. It's not like an alien concept for them to do that. But I think
it did it before Palace too.
But I think generally there was a lot of focus on it because of the magnitude of the game. But yeah, look, Konate got sent off, guys, and I'll be honest, it was this season. He should have had a red card for the exact same challenge on the halfway, and I forgot who it was against. They were at home, though, however. Do you remember who it was against, Gabby?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't remember the player, though.
Do you know what I mean? And he got away with it. He got away with that game. And I'm personally glad that he actually got punished for it, because they tend to do that. He tends to do that quite often. Konate is a fantastic defender. He's great. Not better than Saliba, by the way. But he's a great, great defender. But he gets away with those ones so often. I'm so glad that it was Kai that really put him through the ringer for it, because that's what Kai needs to do with himself. If he's not playing to the standards we hope he can, just make sure that you're making your centre backs really, really sweat. And he got him sent off. It was great, man.
I loved it. I loved it.
Konate owed us that one.
Yeah.
Like, I can't speak to specific tackles, but ever since he showed up at Liverpool, I feel like he gets away with a lot. I don't know if it happens in all the games he plays, but against Arsenal, I see him do things he should be booked for, and referees just ignore it all the time because he's physical and powerful and shit. Like, listen, man. We know what it is, you motherfuckers that think he's as good as Saliba. You just think because he darts in, he's better than Saliba. No, he's not better than Saliba, okay? He's not. He's the one man of the match on his patch, and he got a red card at the Emirates. So hold that.
Yeah, for sure. Trossard's goal. I know for a fact Mitch really enjoyed this because, you know, he's a Trossard booster. This is why it's important to be ambidextrous as a forward, because no other player on our squad, I don't think, is capable of probably putting it in the back of net from that angle, running at that pace, personally, for me. Obviously, it happened after Konate went off, but it's always nice to just put more goals past them. So it I suppose the cherry on top on a result, you know, 3-1 always sounds, 3-1 sounds way better than 2-1 and Mitch. But
I mean, overall, it was a 6-0 game, coach.
Yeah?
Pardon? It felt like a 6-0 game to me personally.
We're gonna get to the stats, guys. Trust me. Mitch, in general, do you think we spoke about Trossard last season, you know, playing in midfield, potentially playing false nine kind of thing? Do you think he just has to accept that he's going to play as a left winger, behind Martinelli now? Do you think that's what he just has to accept now? Because I see no issues with that personally.
I don't think Trossard has a position. I think he's just a utility knife, and that's great. Like, we don't need to pigeonhole every player. Like, he's been really solid when he's come on as a left winger. He's been solid when he started as a left winger. He's been solid at coming off the bench and starting as a false nine, as a left eight. He can play all over the place, which is a great fucking tool to have. And when you have someone that just, like, hates Liverpool, that I didn't think that someone from Belgium could achieve.
It's
outstanding. Yeah, I don't know how he does it. Like, he's a toffee deep down. Yeah. Like, it just deep down inside him, he has got the spirit of Sean Dyche, and it shows every single time he plays against them because he scores.
I love that we have a player like that though. I equate him to our Jota. Like, he just he's a floater, and I feel like we don't have enough players who always have. I know we have like Saka, who is a big game player. He always gets a golden assist or whatever, but we don't have a player who's inevitable against one team. Like, and I think Martinelli is
kind of now the floor, actually. I think you can call it that now. He's Martin, earned that right now, I think. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't think Liverpool enjoy seeing Trossard line up against them at all. He's always got something for them. It's crazy, man. I suppose the same question can be asked about Havertz, guys. We need to actually find a position for him. Like, seriously, I know we don't want to pigeonhole players.
No, we don't.
We do.
We pay the money, we can use him however the fuck we want.
Yeah,
that's my boy. That's the floater. He can do whatever he wants.
I know this is like a podcast and we're kind of supposed to yes and when you ask this question, but no, I'm not going to. No.
vibing, and he was playing one of his best games today, honestly. Just vibing.
That's the reason why I want to talk about it, because in my group chat, they all hate Havertz, by the way.
That's fine.
They all admitted today that he played well, apart from one actually, but they all admitted that he played well today. But it made me think, right? Havertz is probably the most conditional player we have in our squad. I genuinely feel like conditions have to be perfect for him, which is not a good, it's a bad thing. It's not a good thing at all. But with that being said, that's why he needs a position. Go on.
I think the problem is that you're still entertaining the debate. About 30 minutes ago on this same podcast, we talked about how if all he ever does is score goals for us in big games or give center backs problems in big games, he's worth the money we paid for him. I don't give a fuck what any opposing fan thinks about Havertz. He's ours, and he's fucking beautiful. If you want to use it, like today, would you have rather had him play or Nketiah?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, that's not even...
That's not even a question.
Put it right there. That's all that matters. He has raised the level of the squad in several different positions. He can play in Odegaard's position. He can play as the midfielder that I call him. He can play as a striker. Whether you think he's good there or not is irrelevant. The fact is that he can fulfill the role to an elite level, and the coach thinks so.
I wouldn't go to say an elite level, but what his biggest attribute is his understanding of what he's supposed to do. Kai Havertz rarely ever goes off the reservation, which is a good thing. I like Mavericks, but Havertz doesn't go off the reservation, which is good for a coach like Arteta. Is a young coach and he likes to know what's going to happen with the players that he signs or he's going to play. So that's a good thing. But Arsenal have two players in Saka and Martinelli who are unpredictable, who can, you know, hurt anyone kind of thing. The more of those players you have, the better. And this is kind of the point that the others in the Sky panel were making, the fact that outside of Gakpo, Liverpool have four of those players. And really, if we're being honest with ourselves deep down, really only have two. And I think if you spend £65 million on a player, yeah, he's doing great things. He's done like great things that he got through a lot of work.
Don't bring Sky Sports talking. I don't care about this is not a topic, coach. Why are we even entertaining this?
No, because you know the point I'm making.
He's got 3 points. from a motherfucker that has no position.
He's doing dark arts. He's just vibing.
If you just listen to Coach in this podcast, you think we drew.
honestly speaking, guys, like we're gonna need to find something for him, or at least raise the level.
Let me pose a question to you. Do you think that this is the best that Havertz will ever be for us? This is the only thing he can do.
But this is what I'm saying. We need to, because again, I think the conditions for him to thrive, I don't feel like as a squad we're quite there yet for him to really, really, really thrive. And I think we're still, he's still young, the squad's still young, kind of thing. But it's not a foregone conclusion, not only just for him, but for everybody else as well. But yeah, enough Havertz talk, guys, because clearly we're not gonna agree.
Best player in the fucking world.
Give him the Ballon d'Or.
We'll start with VVD. VVD said, right, and he can fuck off with his ponytail, but he said that, you know, the game eventually was tough for them. Eventually tough for them. And that blew my mind, because I was thinking, hold on a second, were you not running around chasing shadows that whole first half, basically? What,
just chatting shit, literally.
Right. Listen, you have to realize that when these interviews happen, like, you're not necessarily the audience. Arsenal fans are not the audience for what VVD is saying. Yeah. The audience are Liverpool fans. He's trying to make them feel better about the fact that they got fucked with no Vaseline today. He destroyed these motherfuckers, man. What are they supposed to go up there and say, like, oh man, Arsenal stepped on our necks today? They can't say that,
well,
you know.
Well, that's the thing. His coach said, look, Arsenal deserve the 3 points, and you know, they're a top side. And then he said, obviously, like, you know, even though they were missing Salah and whoever else, kind of thing, it's not an excuse, which is fair to say. And then he lost his head. And then he started talking about the referees. That's what I knew. It really got to him, you know.
You came to the Emirates and got cooked. You guys were talking a lot of shit about the Emirates. The Emirates test, we can do it without Salah.
He didn't do it,
baby. I don't know what to tell you.
Do you know what I mean? But let's talk about a coach that's not a loser, and not a sore loser at that, Arteta. He echoed a lot of our thoughts, genuinely, about having to suffer and stuff like that. But the more and more I think about it, not just his actual comments, but his celebration and stuff, guys, does that bother you in any way, the way he gets excited? Bearing in mind, he's one of the youngest coaches in the league. Go on.
Real quick, before Mitch jumps in here, we're Americans, so this does not bother us. Okay. You're the one that can answer that question, because it's whining about that shit.
It's fucking annoying. Like, it's okay. My point will always be is that sports are supposed to be fun and entertainment. So when you're acting like, oh, you have to be a professional when your team scores a goal, or you're going full Lindsey Horan where you can't have any fun whatsoever when you're playing the sport, it's just lame, and it's just boomer talk, and it's so stupid. Like, Graham Lasso, the entire match was just like, Mikel Arteta is so unprofessional on the sidelines. It's like, do you see who's on the other fucking side of the touchline? That's Jurgen Klopp. They do the same shit
every single day, and
it's fine. It's totally fine that Jurgen does that. He's passionate. That's good. Do that. It's a fucking game for children. Yeah. Enjoy it.
You see Pep Guardiola, like, fall over, like, scream at the skies, and the referee, like,
I've literally got a whole meme folder of just Pep, guys. Just Pep. Yeah, I'm not even joking. I really do. So, yeah, you're right. The hypocrisy is crazy. But he mentioned our squad, and he was just like, he listed literally all of our big players. He was like, look, we're a good side, but he thinks Liverpool are probably the best side in Europe right now. I disagree, but he said, look, they're the best side in Europe right now, and they've done really well, blah, blah, blah. But we're missing Timber, Tomiyasu, Jesus. He mentioned five. He mentioned somebody else. I can't remember. Maybe he mentioned Thingy as well, going off injured. Zinchenko going off injured. And then he said, when we have everybody available, we're a very, very, very good side. And that really, I wouldn't want to talk about that just because I don't think we've hit real, real peak form yet, genuinely, despite us playing well. And I think we're going to need pretty much everybody fit to do that, guys. Like, what do you think about that?
I agree. Yeah. I 100% agree. I think you were talking about, Dean was talking about earlier, how Havertz has raised the level of the squad. Mm-hmm. Jorginho has as well. When you look at fully fit our squad, mm-hmm. the tools that we have to use. It's just the bench is so good. It's so good. I can't wait till Fabio gets back. I can't wait till Tommy gets back.
He didn't mention Fabio. He definitely didn't mention Fabio, actually.
Well, Fabio had a suspension from his red card, so that's why. He's still suspended, and it's going to carry on until the end of the season because he got a red card and he's still suspended for it, so
that's why. Yeah, look, we didn't even get ESR didn't get on the pitch today. You know, that is our squad has improved dramatically in the last 2 years, guys. I'm so, so pleased with it. And I think, generally speaking, if we're talking final pieces, obviously we'd love someone like that's on the same level as Harry Kane or something like that. But with that being said, I still think midfield through defense, we're stacked when everyone's fit. Like, the unreliable players are the unreliable players. It is what it is. But Arteta has shown in the past, especially in the last year, that he's willing to go into the transfer market to supplement. That's why we have Jorginho. That's why we have Trossard. Yeah, I think this is a good place to leave it. I'm very, very pleased. We smoked Liverpool, you know, 3 point. How much? Let me just read it out. Let me just make sure I get this right. Let me get my binoculars out. Hold on. So we had a 3.52 expected goal. Liverpool had a 0.41, guys. If that's not a spanking, I don't know what that is.
Did all that come from the own goal we gave them?
Most likely. Maybe. Okay, I think there was a shot from Curtis Jones or something like that. That was like from an improbable angle.
Yeah, don't Liverpool fans, if you happen to have the misfortune of hearing this shit, don't talk to us anymore. We're not mates. I don't care what the table says. We're not mates, okay?
Our school is dead.
Like Fulham is better than you motherfuckers, man. Fulham gave us more problems than you little bitches, man. Don't come back to the Emirates playing like that again. Okay, fuck off. Liverpool call. I'm on this shit.
Huh? Listen, all I want to say is it's a great day because not only did Arsenal win, we smoked you and Chelsea lost.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I love it.
Honestly speaking, Chelsea are, put it like this, we're looking at, Chelsea are so far behind, guys, that we're actually now building, me and Dean were building a shopping list. You know, we're looking at Mudblood. You know, do you reckon Enzo might want to have some fun in M5?
Mudblood challenged a guy to a one-on-one competition for 10K, just some random dude in his Instagram DMs. I don't want him anywhere near our stadium. What?
Enzo too.
Listen, I feel like we can pick him up on a discount. Arteta can fix him. Okay.
Mr. I can save him. You know Arteta's looking at it.
They call him the winger whisperer, you know, so you never know. You know, he quite literally changed Martinelli's life, you know. So
And Gabby, before we go, you had something to say about Szoboszlai.
Oh man. Ducking the test, ducking the Havertz test. Man. That guy, that ugly Squidward. I don't ever want to hear his name again. Don't mention him with King Kai again.
Honestly speaking, you know, I'm so glad you brought this up. He is the definition of a false image. He does, basically, yeah, he gets away with the privilege of playing in a lot of 3 p.m. kickoffs. Nobody really watches him for the 90 minutes. It's unfortunate for a lot of people because I do. I watch the 3 p.m. kickoffs. And I can tell you, he stinks for the most part. So, yeah, fuck him. I want to let you guys say peace for once. But, yeah, let's get out of here.
Peace.
Ha!
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Plantation.